Some stations on shortwave sound like they've been around since the dinosaur era, presenting stories the way they did in the 160s, 70s, and 80,000 years ago. Snap out of your Mesozoic mood and switch to Radio Netherlands, contemporary continental radio from the heart of Northwest Europe.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Marks, together with Diana Jonser. Welcome to Media Network Safari. This time, we're off to Brussels.
U luistert naar Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal.
This year, our colleagues at Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal are celebrating 50 years of their existence, and they've shared some of their archives with us.
As we look back at the archives, we discover that Belgium has been active on shortwave for much longer than 50 years. Jacques van der Sichel, director of the station, has researched into the history and explains that Belgium's appearance on the dial actually goes back 58 years.
Oh yes, the first shortwave transmissions from Belgium to its colony, obviously, were started up in 1937. And they came out of a shortwave transmission centre of our PTT in Ruisseleden, which is near the Belgian coast, and which was used for wireless telegrams and things like that, Morse. And then they had one transmitter fixed for real radio transmission, and they sent 1 hour and a half every day to the colony, which consisted of 15 minutes news in French, 15 minutes of news in Dutch, and 1 hour of music. And that was operated by the Belgian government, who took the material from our national broadcaster. So it had nothing to do with the broadcaster itself. They just delivered the programs, and that was it. That went on until May 1940, when the German army came into Belgium and they destroyed the transmitters, and that was the end of it.
Just before the German invasion, the Belgian National Radio had been planning to upgrade the facilities in Ruisseleden to improve reception of its programmes in other parts of the world. In fact, with war in Europe, the new high-power facilities were constructed in Africa, in the Belgian colony of Congo, that's now Zaire. Frans Vossen, media producer at the English department of Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal, takes up the story.
Broadcasting there started in the 30s and was purely a colonial affair in the sense that it was strictly separated from radio in Belgium itself. So also in the colony, for instance, people were taxed for having a radio set, and that money was used for local broadcasts. Nothing went back to Belgium, so to speak. So it was, but all that changed then in the war, because in Belgium, of course, was occupied by the Germans. Belgian government had left, went to London, and decided that Belgium should have its own voice on the air.
Like many governments in exile, the Belgian government was granted airtime on BBC transmitters. They could broadcast commentary on the events in Europe, but the news was strictly controlled by the Flemish service of the BBC, a totally separate service, itself censored by the British government.
In fact, it was a broadcast on the Flemish service of the BBC who's credited for the idea of the Victory V campaign, including the letter V in Morse code, which the BBC used as an interval signal.
Radio Belgique.
Hier Radio België.
Ici Radio Belgique.
Hier Radio België.
Ici Radio Belgique.
Hier Radio België.
Now, Belgians were given a bit of airtime on the BBC, but that was not satisfying, so they decided that they would buy a transmitter and ship it to the Congo. Of course, they had already a couple of transmitters, but that was, as I said, purely for colonial purposes for the administration there.
So pretty weak, I mean, something like about 7.5 kilowatts, yeah.
And it was local, yes. It was in mainly in the big cities, in Leopoldville, it's now Kinshasa, and in Lubumbashi, then Elizabethville, etc.
The idea of using Africa as a base to beam back into occupied Europe actually came from the Free French, who had earlier purchased a 50-kilowatt transmitter in the United States and by September of 1940 had assembled it, together with six antennas, in Brazzaville in the French Congo. On the other side of the Congo River, the Belgians began to set up very similar facilities in Leopoldstadt, or Leopoldville, it's the same place. By the 16th of May 1943, construction had been completed and the new high-power facility came on the air.
Allô Léopoldville, allô Léopoldville, notre émission est terminée. Nous reviendrons au microphone à 18h55 GMT. À tout à l'heure.
In those days, 50 kilowatts was pretty heavy stuff. I mean, and there was no overcrowding of the band, so that travelled very far and easily back to Europe. So they could have their own transmissions, which were produced mainly in Leopoldville, in London and in New York.
But how did the Belgian government, sitting in exile in London, then communicate with the transmitter site down in Leopoldville of Leopoldstadt?
Well, they were broadcast via BBC frequencies and relayed instantly on the shortwave by the transmitters in Leopoldville.
Programs from the Dutch government in exile, Radio Oranje, were also relayed from Leopoldstadt.
The Belgians in the United States became active too, producing programs in French, Flemish and English and sending them on a US government shortwave link out of New York for reception and relay from the 50 kilowatt transmitter in Leopoldstadt.
This is Madame Henri Laurent bringing you your weekly underground news from Belgium. Since the beginning of the end of the Sicilian campaign, since the disappearance of Mussolini and the rioting and clamoring of the Italian people for peace, since the news of the sixth historic meeting of Churchill and Roosevelt has gone around the world, the people in occupied Belgium must be feeling a little more hope in their dark...
There was part of the old radio staff and of the government. There were a couple of ministers, especially the finance minister and others, were in New York and in Washington. And part of the old staff of the Belgian radio had gone to New York as well, and to London, of course, obviously.
Some of the government information about life in the Belgian Congo was dramatized.
I read that two-thirds of the Congo natives are medically examined or treated each year without charging them a penny.
What?
Yep.
Is everything paid for by the state governor?
The Congo government pays for most of it. But private companies and missions also have free medical services. Not only that, but the Congo has the largest medical staff of any colony.
The transmitter had a wide coverage, and in return for airtime on the BBC transmitters in Britain for the Radio Belgique programme, the Belgian transmitter in the Congo relayed some forces programmes from London.
From October 1943, there were broadcasts to other parts of the world as well, and in other languages. That's how the transmitter in Leopoldville was used for programmes for the Allied forces, especially in the Middle East.
Entre os países europeus que sofrem sob o jugo alemão, existe um que conta com a simpatia universal, a Bélgica.
The first actually was Portuguese, and that is because of the African tradition. A lot of Portuguese were working in what was then Congo, now Zaire. Angola was a neighboring country and a Portuguese colony. So Portuguese was the first foreign language that we have used, and we've continued to use it for quite a number of years.
By October of 1943, Leopoldstadt had quite a production centre to put out the programmes.
So that... you had broadcast in nine languages, in Dutch, in French, in English, in Spanish, Portuguese, even in Luxembourg Dutch, Letzebuergisch, in Afrikaans, in Turkish, and in German. Of course, all these people were not Belgian, especially for the foreign languages, but the aim was to put that transmitter at the disposal of the Allied forces, and especially for the campaign in the Middle East.
So most of the production then was taking place in the Congo?
In Leopoldville, and in a lot of the stuff came from New York actually as well, yes.
On the 4th of September 1944, British troops advanced towards Brussels. Reportages on the event were broadcast from an emergency studio nearby, and once the old broadcasting house on the Flagierplein in Brussels were back in Belgian hands, the transmissions of Radio België from London closed down.
Het zal niet meer zijn, hier de Belgen uit Londen, hier de Belgen uit New York, here the Belgian...
From now on, it will no longer be Belgians speaking back to their mother country from London, New York and Leopoldstadt. Belgium will now use its 50 kilowatt transmitter to speak to the world.
Shortly afterwards, attempts were made to re-establish an external service from Belgian soil. At the end of January 1945, the Wereldienst was established. It initially sent news to the Congo in Morse code, where a staff put programs together and transmitted them back to Europe and indeed other parts of the world. Later, a 5-kilowatt feeder transmitter was established to feed 30 minutes of programs from Brussels to Leopoldstadt for broadcast on shortwave.
The total transmission time at that time was something like 14, 15 hours a day in French, in Dutch, in English, Portuguese and Spanish. A lot of the programs, of course, were still produced in Leopoldville itself because part of the people never came back to Belgium. They stayed there.
This must have been one of the most powerful stations in Africa at the time.
Well, I guess so, yes, yes. And OTC, it was called then first. And then they started producing their own programs, not only relaying stuff from the colonial radio or from the Belgian national radio. They had programs for Belgians abroad, not only those in the Congo, but anywhere in the world. And it was always, of course, the old Unitarian Belgium. So it was always in Dutch and in French. Then in 1947... there was that very modern phenomenon of cuts, the first cuts. And that was that the staff at the time, and there were some 27 in Brussels, I've got the figures here, and 66 in Leopoldville. There was reduced to 20 in Brussels and to 50 in the colony. And the transmission was cut down by 5 hours to around 10 hours a day. And then in 1948, more cuts. The budget was down to 18 million francs. From 24, part of the staff in Leopoldville were dismissed, others were transferred to Brussels. So in 1948, that is also an important date for old listeners, you might remember that. In that year, we adopted the name of International Goodwill Station. There was twice daily there was a program. Can you imagine a mailbag program, a listener's mail, it was called Amongst Friends. And it was a daily program for seamen. There were family greetings. That entre amis, onder ons, still exists, amongst us, amongst feature with special maritime news, messages for seamen, for families of people abroad.
In 1952, the Belgian External Service opened a new transmission centre at Wavre, just outside Brussels, on what today runs along the boundary between French and Flemish-speaking Belgium. The transmitter in Leopoldstadt continued to relay programmes until Congo got its independence in the early 1960s. Compared with the heyday of the 40s and 50s, the 60s saw a lot of austerity measures.
From the early 60s to the late 70s, you know, almost 20 years, everything was done on a very low scale, and foreign languages were mostly done by transcription.
We had still at that time, until 70, there were 9 languages. It was French, Dutch, English, Spanish, Portuguese, and 4 African languages. 4 languages spoken, largely spoken, in Zaire, Chiluba, Kikongo, Swahili, and Lingala. Then, in 1976, in January, BRT and RTB were completely separated. We were one of the last services to be split. But then Portuguese was dropped, for instance. It came back later, but then... And also the languages in the African languages were dropped. Unfortunately, it's a pity, really, because many people in Zaire said, why did you stop? The point was that nobody wanted to pay for it.
While some languages disappeared, others came on the air.
Since then, we have added German, which in fact is the third national language in Belgium. And we have added French, mainly because of the fact that our French-speaking colleagues here, RTBF, has abandoned international radio altogether for financial budgetary reasons. So we now have those 4 languages, foreign languages, plus Dutch, and then in 1992 we added Arabic to it, which makes 6 for the time being.
What's happened to the old RTBF facilities then? Because the shortwave site is at the same place.
Yes, we are at the same place, and we had exactly the same kind of facilities, with one difference that we have acquired a new shortwave transmitter in the early 80s, which they have not done. And now their main transmitter, which was actually the twin brother of ours, which is a 250 kilowatt transmitter, dating back to 1974, we have bought it now for nothing. And we have revised it completely, and we're now going to use it.
Okay, so there's the shortwave side, but at the same time, since you've been in charge of the operation, you've also looked for other means of distributing the signals.
Well, obviously, we are going for satellite, which is the future. And even that short-time future, because the satellite transmissions as they are now, that will last for, give and take, 10 years after that. There will be new means, also by satellite, but in another format, and much more easily to be received. But in that transition period, I think we cannot miss the satellite age. So we have already a satellite channel in Europe on Astra, and we're looking for more.
An exchange agreement between Deutsche Welle and Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal for a transmitter swap was set up in April this year. Deutsche Welle's Dutch program gets better coverage now in Flanders, and Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal gets a stronger signal into Eastern Europe.
The weather. A bright, sunny day with maximum temperatures from 19 to 26 degrees Celsius. Tomorrow will again be fine, but it will be hotter. It's now time to join Diane Lehmann for our press review.
Croats plunder their way through Krajina, headlines the Standard.
There is a problem with a number of our Flemish listeners, who, because we're putting out one program, one single program, with varying contents. Let's say you have 1 hour of Dutch and then you have another hour of English and French and so on. And Flemish listeners would prefer to have a full-sized Dutch service round the clock. We can produce it if we want, but we can't transmit it because we don't have the means to do that.
And at the same time, you're also expanding the distribution of your foreign language services, for example, German.
Yeah, correct. English and German is the easiest to do. Our English program on World Radio Network for Europe, which is less interesting for us because we are on the same Astra satellite anyway, but still. And for North America, which is much more interesting. And also our German program is relayed by a number of mostly private radio stations in the German part of Belgium, who reach quite an interesting part of Germany because they are on the border with their FM transmitters. And in Germany itself with a commercial company who is on shortwave, on satellite, on medium wave and even on shortwave.
Radio Europa.
Radio Europa, yes.
Where are most of the Flemish speakers living in the world outside Belgium?
That depends. If you talk about people who live permanently abroad, then Africa is still number one. Not so much Central Africa as it used to be, but Southern Africa, like Namibia and South Africa itself, because of the similarity of language. And when you speak Dutch, you can speak Afrikaans. You can understand each other very easily, no problem. Then there is North America, Canada, United States, Asia, very little. When we talk about traveling listeners, then of course it's Europe. That's the holiday makers in summer and the retired who go to the coasts of Spain for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months during the winter. That is quite a considerable audience and an interesting audience.
Broadcasting House in the centre of Brussels is really two completely different stations in one. There are separate entrances, one for the French RTBF, another for the Flemish-speaking BRTN. Is there any contact between the two halves of Belgian public broadcasting?
No, not really. No, it's purely, let's say, on a personal basis. I mean, journalists from our service and from RTBF, we know each other and we know that we can ask them for stuff or to sound material or whatever. But that is not organized. That's purely because of the nearness and because we know each other. But it could be, officially, it could be Radio Moscow.
But it's strange walking down the corridor because there is, at one point, a sort of language barrier, isn't there,
right.
As you cross over it?
Straight across the middle of the building, yes. It's very funny because everything is exactly the same. Now we are building new studios here. That's a different matter. But the old studios are exactly the same at the other side of the building, in the RTBF side.
Except a different colour.
Yes, exactly. Different colour. Ours are, the machines are orange, and the RTBF side, they are green.
If you go to the transmitter site in Wavre, the French side of the transmission hall, which used to belong to the RTBF, is a bit like a ghost town, with the last transmission schedule still taped to the control desk, as though someone went out for a cup of coffee and never came back. Budget cuts forced the French-speaking community to pull the plug.
There was an outcry in the French-speaking press, because how can you be without an international voice? And they felt that immediately when the first crisis arrived. Something happened in Africa, and we've had Rwanda, we've had Zaire, people, soldiers in Somalia, in Rwanda, etc. And then suddenly they didn't have a shortwave transmitter anymore because they had switched it off. And then they came to us to ask if they could read official messages and things, or family greetings and things like that. And we still do that. Certain people, certainly now in Africa, in certain parts of Africa, in Zaire, where local infrastructure has broken down. Even the mail doesn't work, the mail, the post service and things. We give them that service, we offer that service.
Does it mean, though, that you're only representing part of Belgium? I mean, you say that the voice of the Flemish community in Belgium, in French.
Yes, I know. But we only represent Flanders.
Thanks to Frans Vossen and Jacques van der Zichel for sharing those lovely stories.
And that's all for this edition of Media Network. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye for now.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.